Welcome in to Michelle and Junie, coming live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios here on 102.5 The Game. Every Saturday morning, you can tune in to Michelle and Junie from 9 to 11. But this week, again, with his return, we have Nick Keezer filling in for Michelle Knezovic, who is Miss Continental USA, is down in New Orleans again, helping her boyfriend, Ryan, from Chicago, get settled in as he just took his new job at Tulane. Keezer, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing great. You know, I think the whole Continental thing, I was picking on Michelle because we've been kind of making up for that lost time that she and I had not had co-hosting because our fearless leader, Chase McCabe, was in St. Louis taking in a Cardinals game last night. But yeah, I got to co-host with her, so I've kind of gotten my fill with the both of you, but at the same given time, all three of us have not been in the same room since the Preds were last in season, I think. So, but no, it's good to be here this morning, and glad to get started.
We got Nick Frazier behind the glass, producing, doing an excellent job. As always, Frazier, how are we doing this Saturday morning?
Thank you, Junie, for the wonderful compliment. Doing quite well. Yeah, running on about 3.5 hours of sleep, but it was well worth it.
Listen, Frazier is one of the hardest working men in the business. He does a great job, so we are glad to have you here. And if you would have told me that you only had 3 hours of sleep, I would have known. So prop to you and in your demeanor, Frazier. So
thank you very much, sir.
You can always watch us here on 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook, live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app and use the promo code THEGAME to get some special deals. So a lot going on in the world of sports. We are going to kick off our morning brew this morning with the Milwaukee Admirals. They were playing down in Texas against the Stars for Game 4. They had a 2-1 advantage going into the game. It went into double overtime, and the Texas Stars wound up winning 4-3 last night to force a Game 5 that will it be aired on our station, Nick?
Yes.
Will we have it on Sunday?
Yes.
So Game 5. And it is a five-game series. Will be decided on Sunday, and you can listen to that right here on 102.5 The Game. But other big news going on, we have the Heat going 2-0 against the Boston Celtics in Boston to kick off the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know if you watched any of that game last night.
What a crazy game.
It was a crazy game.
Oh, my gosh. And, like, just the fact that you have just the turmoil that there was last night, I really enjoyed that because when you look at how Jimmy Butler plays and who may or may not be his dad, I guess, the whole little theory that's there.
I have seen that conspiracy theory, and I'm starting to buy into it.
Now, look, that's the thing. Like, he played so well, and it's so – I want to say eerily, but I don't think that's necessarily true because we don't know yet. But I do think the way he took over the game last night – against Grant Williams, and they were going back and forth. That's sports. That's something I will watch every single night.
It's something about the NBA that I feel like is starting to come back a little bit that has been missing from the game for some time. You know, I feel like kind of in the LeBron era of basketball, you know, ever since he really took the torch from Kobe, that it's kind of been buddy-buddy, who can we go and team up with, you know, always working out with, you know, different players in the off season, and everybody seems to be ultra-super friendly. Well, I don't like that. I don't like that. I like it when guys, you know, start talking some smack and getting it into each other's faces, and it really starts to motivate one side or the other, and that's exactly what happened. And really, these two games, Game 1 and Game 2 of this Celtics and Heat series have kind of – gone the same way. The Celtics really, it's been a back and forth first half, you know, a lot of lead changes, and then the Celtics get a decent lead in the third quarter and wind up blowing it. I don't think Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum hit a field goal in the fourth quarter last night.
No,
which
I
is
don't think so.
A huge cause for concern.
I don't
for Celtics
think so
fans.
And it is a cause for concern, Junie, for sure. I'm going to try to pull up a couple of different things that I saw from the game last night because it was absolutely insane. Because that – now, I was mentioning the head-to-head matchup, and that was really fun to watch. So here's one I will rattle off to start us off is the Celtics are now 8-11 in their last 19 home playoff games. So, yeah, that little trend has not been going their way as of late. And then another thing, too – that I thought was crucial last night for the Heat. Mm-hmm. Caleb Martin had 25 points and 4 rebounds off the bench.
Yeah, no, I did see that. Caleb Martin had a really good game last night. Like you mentioned, 25 points, but Duncan Robinson off the bench.
He was good too.
You know, he had 15 points, and you know, he's typically not contributing like that. But on the Celtics side of things, you know, the difference that I'm seeing in this year's playoff run compared to last year's when they made the NBA Finals against the Warriors, mm-hmm. was the offensive production of Marcus Smart. You know, Marcus Smart last year, and I remember when he got drafted to the Celtics and how lack of, you know, of an offensive game he really had. And I remember watching the finals last year and thinking, like, wow, you know, Marcus, not only is he such a tenacious defender and really the emotional leader of the Boston Celtics, but he was really producing offensively, having multiple 20-point games in the NBA Finals last year, and I felt like having him really opened up the floor for Tatum and Brown to get some easier opportunities. But with Marcus Smart really struggling, only scoring, you know, 7 points and not having much of an impact in the game, 0 steals in the game as well, Jaylen Brown only 16 points. His plus-minus was minus 24 when he was on the floor, Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, he did not look good. He did not look good whatsoever, and he needs to channel who he has been consistently. And if his team doesn't, we got a lot of question marks.
Well, he's another player that, you know, when he first came into the league, he was not a great shooter.
No, he wasn't.
And it's like he had to really work and develop that aspect of his game. And last night, 7-23 from the field, 1-7 from three. You just have to have more than that. And it flat out just wasn't enough. But in another playoff game, and I actually did not get to watch this game last night. I saw some of the overtime highlights, but the Golden Knights beat the Dallas Stars 4-3 in overtime. Nick, did you watch the game? Did you get to see some of it? And if so, what were your kind of takeaways from that game one? It seemed like a really good game.
Oh, it was a really fun game. That was a hell of a start to the series. I'm thankful that we did not get 4 overtimes going into 2:00 in the morning last night. So
thank
that
God.
Was fun. Oh man, I know. Bless your heart. But I think when I was watching the game, I was focused on the Admirals. Okay, because we have really good prospects. We'll get into that later. But I will say that the Golden Knights have always been that little pesky team ever since they've come into the NHL.
Well, they made that run to the Stanley Cup Finals in that first year.
The very first year, yes. The very first season they did, and it was impressive, and everybody hated them after that unless you lived in Las Vegas. Now, Brett Howden scored the game winner last night. I've not really seen a game winner like this because he was behind the net. He was trying to find a pass. And realistically, he was looking for a shot, too. But the way that he found his shot, he just banked it off of Jake Oettinger and into the net like it was nothing last night. And when you are trying to find that little bit of space, you just have to make it count. And he did last night, and he came out of nowhere. And I thought he was a good player last night. But I thought also guys like Jack Eichel, when he's turning on a dime, when he's stopping, when he's making plays, you got Mark Stone, the captain, that's back. I mean, Mark Stone, that's so controversial with the Golden Knights, too. They put guys on long-term IR, which they're actually hurt, but then they come back in the postseason, and then they start tearing teams up, and it's like, well, what the hell, man? Like, you can't have everybody coming back and just now being healthy. Well, it's fair. I mean, it's within the rules. Now, I've heard some things before where the NHL and the GMs, they may need to change that at some point with when you can come back and who and how long you can stay on the long-term IR, because Stone missed a significant amount of the season. I don't have it in front of me to know how many games he missed, but look, the Golden Knights taking that first game in Vegas when I thought the Stars could have walked away last night before overtime. Jamie Benn scored that goal late to force overtime, which that was a great, great goal by him. It was a wide-open net, but the Stars, I mean, I feel good about them in the series overall, Junie. They got a really good goaltender. I think that they could – I think they – they could bounce back and it wouldn't shock anybody in game two.
Well, if they get it in game two and they kind of steal the home field or home ice advantage,
home ice, I should say. Same thing.
It will be big for this team. And like you said, a big opportunity and a tone setter would have been for the Dallas Stars to come out and get a win. But you did mention the Carolina Hurricanes and the Florida Panthers going into a 4-overtime game.
Yes.
Now, I'm sure you know this, and it has to be one of the longest playoff games of all time.
I believe it was listed as the 6th longest game.
Six. I'm surprised it didn't crack the top five.
No, and the goaltender, Sergei Bobrovsky, made 63 saves, which broke a record, which was previously held by John Van Briesbrook, who had 60 saves, and that was back in 96.
And
also the last time they went to the conference final and the Stanley Cup.
Well, here's another thing, too, is Matthew Tkachuk getting the goal with, what was it, 13 seconds left in the fourth?
12.7 seconds, and his celebration was picture-perfect. The way that he went about his business.
Straight to the locker room.
He's like, let's go.
Let's just go. Get off the ice. They're going to go crazy here in Richmond. They're going to throw stuff. Like, we got to go.
Yeah.
And at that point, I don't know how many people were still there. I mean, it was a weekday night and a crazy game, but you know they're going to be going at it again in Carolina tonight. So that's going to be a really good game.
Now, real quick, Junie. Now, the question that Michelle and I posed after that game was, what was the longest sporting event that you've ever been to? So if you want to share, text us 615-737-1025, WilsonCountyHyundai.com. But yeah, I think that would be a fun one to talk about throughout the show.
So I've never been to a game that went into overtime that was like super long and super crazy. But
okay.
I do remember, you know, me growing up in Louisville, being a big Louisville Cardinals fan,
as one is,
that I always religiously watch the Big East basketball tournament, and I will never forget the 6 overtime game between UConn and Syracuse in the Big East tournament. And I just remember watching that whole game, just like eyes glued to the TV, thinking that was one of the best basketball games I've ever watched. And I actually tweeted at Michelle with that.
That was one of a couple of different text messages that we got, was that game.
Yeah, that game was flat out awesome. But coming up next, we are going to kind of get into a little bit more in depth with the NBA and NHL playoffs. The Denver Nuggets and Lakers play tonight, and after their 4-overtime game, the Hurricanes and the Florida Panthers are going to go at it in game two. We will recap that and preview those. You are listening to Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
Did Grant Williams make a mistake poking the bear with Jimmy Butler?
Next question.
Welcome! That was Jaylen Brown when asked about Grant Williams getting in the face and chirping Jimmy Butler after an and one. I don't think that's the proper time to be talking to a guy like Jimmy Butler, trying to get up in his face to motivate him after you foul him, and it was like a mid-range jumper and it just sunk through. That's just not the time to get in somebody's face. Listen, I know Grant Williams on the other end of the court, you know, just knocked down a three, you know, half of his points from last night, but dude, that's not the guy that you want to get in the face of, and you're not the guy to do it. And I think before that play, the Celtics were up 9. And this is in the fourth quarter,
I believe. It was pretty close.
It was in the fourth quarter, I believe. So the bucket in the and one cut it to a 6-point lead. And after that play, the Heat go on a 24-9 run to close it out. And Jaylen Brown and Tatum did not score in that span. And the Celtics just absolutely choked away another lead to the Miami Heat. I just, like, Jimmy Butler is that guy. I can't even compare him to another player in the league, because it's like he just flies under the radar all season long. And when he gets into the playoffs, it's just a different gear. And it's not even like one gear. It's like he shoots up 3.
Yeah.
And he's just the go-to guy. Not only is he the emotional leader, but he's like the top dog on the team. And he just sets the tone. And for a team that's missing Tyler Hero, who was their, I believe he was their third leading scorer this year.
I think that sounds about right, yeah.
And the fact that they're still doing this in beating the Bucks in 5 games, you know, taking down the Knicks in six games when, you know, Madison Square Garden is such a hard place to play. And then you got the Celtics down 2-0, and you just absolutely sweep them in the Garden. I mean, this is unprecedented to me.
It really is. And when you have this little bit of a swing going your favor, how do you feel as a fan? How do you feel as a player? Because when this gets killed in your favor, you lose the first two games at home. Now, the NBA, I think, is unique in the way that they play their series, Junie. And the way that you've seen momentum shift in some of these series so far. Now, I'm not going to count LeBron out completely yet. But, look, now, the Heat series, when you lose two games at home and someone has poked the bear just like someone poked LeBron, who is now a younger player that's been poked and is more than capable of taking over games consistently, I think he is more than capable to help them sweep the Celtics. I'm not calling that, but I'm saying when you transition yourself over back to Miami, and look, sports apparently seem to run through Miami this spring.
Yeah.
And the Panthers have been playing well. The Heat have been playing well.
As 8 seeds.
Yes.
Both of them.
Yes. Now, were the Heat the worst seeded team in the postseason when they got in? Because if so, that would be exactly how the Florida Panthers are.
I can't remember because, you know, obviously the 7 and 8 seeds are play-ins. Well, I can't remember if it was them or Atlanta that was the higher seed because they wound up losing to the Hawks in the play-in game.
Yeah.
And then the Heat had to beat the Bulls to become the 8th seed.
Well, I think
in the second play-in game.
Regardless, it's a battle of the misfits, and they are winning right now. Handedly winning right now.
Would they be the first 8 seed in the NBA to make it to the NBA Finals?
I
think they will because, really, like you said, sweep. I don't think the Heat are going to sweep the Celtics. I think the Celtics will get one game down in South Beach.
Would you believe it if they did?
What?
Do you think it's likely more than not winning the first two?
I think it's more likely the Celtics get a game than get swept. I think the Celtics are too talented. They're a little bit deeper than Miami. I know Miami's bench has played better in these first two games. Don't get me wrong, but when the Celtics are firing on all cylinders, and like we mentioned, you know, Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown are playing up to their standards, they're the better team. And so I think this series is over. Like, I do. Because all really Miami has to do is to win one game in Miami. You're up 3-1. You still have home court advantage, and then you go back to Boston where you already won one, and then you get Miami. You go back to Miami in Game 6, and I don't think the series gets past Game 6 with how it's going right now.
I don't think so.
It would take a miracle.
Yeah, but I think it could go. Like, here's the thing: what if, you know, the narrative kind of becomes, okay, we're just gonna split our series at home, and then we'll just wrap it up in Boston, like, you know, that could be something that they could do. I mean,
that'd be demoralizing to Celtics fans.
I think 6 games is pretty feasible. Like, that's a pretty good happy medium for the most part. But if you see them losing 5, like you said, that's pretty demoralizing if you're a fan.
So I want to get into LeBron and the Lakers going up against the Nuggets as well. You know, Jokic just absolutely balled out in
Cheat
game
code,
one.
Man.
I mean, the triple-double with what was it, 20 rebounds, 20-plus rebounds?
Yeah, 21, 22, I think, something like that.
It's absurd. And I like the point that you made, it might have been yesterday, talking about playing in Denver with the altitude.
Yeah.
The age of the Lakers has to play a part in this, and the altitude and how that affects athletes' conditioning. I mean, Denver's a tough
it
place to
sucks,
play.
It sucks, man. I was there snowboarding. Like, look, I'm not a pro athlete, but look, it really does bother people. It truly does. And when you play downtown, especially too, where the air is thinner and you are in a boxed in place and there are thousands and thousands of people there watching you.
And they got a good crowd in Denver too.
They got
passionate fans.
Yes. And I think that honestly plays a bigger part than people think it really does, because when you are on the sideline and you are trying to drink electrolytes, look, you can't get by. Like, you could drink water. You can do whatever you want. But I'm saying to stay ready, to not cramp up, to stay in shape throughout the game and keep yourself ready to play at your best level, it's very difficult.
So with this Nuggets and Lakers series, I think the Lakers have to win two in a row in Los Angeles.
100%.
Just to have a chance. Because I think it would really take a lot. And it would have to take a historic performance by LeBron. Probably one of his greatest road playoff games. Because, you know, some of those games that he had back when he was playing in Cleveland and even in Miami for some of those years, that he had to go on the road and win in places like Boston.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to have one of those historic games that people are going to go back and be like, okay, LeBron absolutely took this game over, stole a game in Denver, and took advantage of winning at home in order for them to even have a chance. Because if the Nuggets win a game in Los Angeles in games three or four, this series is over in game five.
Okay.
I think that right now.
I think that's completely reasonable. Now, the other thing I want to bring up, too, that I asked Michelle, and I think you are going more into this than maybe our conversation had when I was with her, but what do you think about LeBron's legacy? If he was to go to the finals, or if he was even to win it, do you think this is the hardest postseason in his entire career? Is it the most accomplished one, perhaps, like how he got there, how he finished, and maybe some of the games that he had?
I would say, and you're just saying just going to the finals, right?
Yeah.
Not winning it, just going.
It could be both, but it could also just be the journey to get there.
Okay, I would say this. It would be second for me. The 2007 run that he had to go to the NBA Finals, and they ended up getting swept by the Spurs, mm-hmm. and that's what a lot of people remember. But for him to get there with that cast of players,
so difficult.
And at such a young age, where, you know, his game wasn't nearly as developed as it is now. He was such a freakish athlete that, you know, he could get through it. But you're talking about him not really having a perimeter game. His mid-range jump shot at the time wasn't as refined as it is now. You know, him carrying that cast of crew at such a young age, I think that to this day is one of his greatest accomplishments. You know, obviously him coming back and beating the historic Warriors from 3-1. But, you know, he had a really good cast around him in that series as well. So this would definitely be top three playoff performance and playoff run for me with LeBron James. This is somebody who's a huge critic of LeBron.
Yes. And I think that would be completely fair from my perspective, too. I thought it was a huge question to ask because it is his legacy. He's the all-time leading scorer. He's the GOAT in a lot of people's eyes, and I think there are tons of arguments there. Obviously, in sports talk TV and radio and anywhere else, even writing, it's a really popular topic. But I thought I would ask that question.
Yeah, no, definitely. LeBron is one of the greatest of all time for me. You know, I'm still on Team Jordan. But wait, we're not going to get into that. That nobody cares. But what people have been caring about this week and the weeks coming up, and it has been a huge topic surrounding Mr. Keezer over here, has been about the Milwaukee Admirals. We are going to have a response on our show to a lot of the criticism from other people on this station that have been talking down about the Predators farm team. Coming up next here on Michelle and Junior, you're listening to 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
The wide open on the right wing, Evangelista gets to the right dot, shoots, scores! Luke Evangelista, 8:02 of the first period, perfect feed and stride from Ratcliffe. For Luke Evangelista, that is his fourth of the postseason, and Milwaukee enjoys a 2-0 lead here in game number four.
That was the radio call in Milwaukee as Luke Evangelista put up a goal last night in the first period. Again, we recapped that in the Morning Brew in our first segment about how it went into double overtime. And the Milwaukee Admirals just slipped up and lost 4-3. So the Stars forced a Game 5 that you can hear on our airways on Sunday. So make sure to get the info and tune into that. What time is that puck drop, Nick?
Should be at 7 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. But
7 p.m.
But it's airing in Milwaukee. We're just happening to do that, which I heard that we've also done. Like, we've got the sounds on 94.9, mm-hmm. and we've actually aired, I believe, No, not Brewers games. It was flip-flopped. They've aired 94.9 games in years past, apparently. When they were on a run, yes.
It's been a good partnership with Milwaukee. You know, we have their minor league baseball team. They have our minor league hockey team. So the connection is there between the two cities. But something that I really wanted to get into, because you've been catching a lot of flack from a few individuals on our radio station this week about you kind of covering the Milwaukee Admirals. And I went in and did the research, and I looked at the box score last night, and there was a total of 19 players that played for the Milwaukee Admirals last night. 12 of those players played at least 5 games for the Nashville Predators. 13 of them played for the Nashville Predators, if you count Askarov, who played that one road game up there in Montreal. And obviously, he is still a big part of this. And then I added one more player to make it 14 of the 19, because Joachim Kimmel has been just about a point per game player. So we're talking about 14 of 19 players that are on the Nashville Predators' radar as being contributors to the team. And yet, we still have people on our station who are questioning the fact as to why Preds fans and Preds media are diving into the Milwaukee Admirals as they make a playoff run. Who cares about the Milwaukee Admirals winning a playoff game? I'll tell you this. If we have 14 of 19 players that have played up here in the big leagues with the Preds this season, who were contributors, a lot of them some pretty big contributors to the success towards the tail end of the season, why wouldn't you care if this team, why wouldn't you care if this team wins or loses when you see that there are so many of these players that are actually playing in the big league? So I want to go to our afternoon show and the comments that were made earlier this week. And afterward, I would like Nick Kieser to respond.
Somebody got really mad on Twitter, and they tweeted me. And they said, so Jared Stillman decides anyone keeping up with the Milwaukee Admirals is wasting their time and has no life. Did I say they have no life?
I don't know if you said that.
The Milwaukee Admirals!
If you want to watch Evangelista, Tomasino, Kimball, Askarov, those guys, fine. I get it. But if you actually care about the result of the game, you got to get a life. Now, I will say this with one big asterisk.
Yeah. Well, yes, that was precisely what Jared Stillman had to say, Junie. And minding my own business, covering the team during an interview,
which you do a great job doing, by the way,
I appreciate that, I was getting messages from my beer league hockey team out of every place that I initially saw it that said, hey, I don't know if you saw this. And then I went back and I listened to those parts of the show. Now, the back half of it was what Jared initially said. So you heard Joe say, the Milwaukee Admirals. We just had to put some sort of transition in there. That was the beginning to what Jared had to say in the fourth segment of his first hour at 2:45. And I will preface that Jared and I have had a conversation. We're fine. We aired it out. But look.
It's all in good fun.
Yes, absolutely. But look, at the end of the day, when you are covering a professional sports team, and Junie laid it out perfectly, absolutely beautifully, how it needs to be thought of, is you have the prospects, and I have even come on this show on Saturdays and even told my midday show that I produce about what's going on with the Admirals throughout the season. Because if you don't, you're not going to be aware of who's coming up. I even talked to a kid that will be joining the Admirals next year. You don't think I'll pay attention to him? Absolutely I will. Joachim Kimmel. I'm starting to say his name right now. But I think at the end of the day, it's fine. Look, you can have your opinion with it, and that's warranted. Now, when you're covering this team and you need, and I think there is a need for this coverage in town, it makes a difference. And clearly, especially some of the responses I had, whether it's from coworkers or if it's from the fans or if it's from local media, that know me personally or that know me now because of what Jared said, actually, I think it's fine. But I think it's fine to think that it doesn't matter. The result doesn't matter. Now, what matters is the prospects. I agree with that part. I agree with the whole argument. But when you are a professional writer for Nashville Hockey Now, by the way, that's where I am at now.
Plug your stuff.
I'm saying when you are covering the team like anybody else should be doing, by the way, that's why I said for what it's worth, I did not do play-by-play of what they did the other night. I was literally out with my significant other, and we were out minding our own business.
Yeah.
I see that they score a couple goals, and I quote tweet just like anybody else probably would do if they're watching the prospects play.
Well, in spite of this, I feel like more people went and did play-by-play of the Admirals.
Last night.
I don't know. I feel like it is our job for what people care about. The Preds missed the playoffs for the first time in 9 years. There are so many players, and it's an outlier, really.
Yes.
You said it yourself. Like, the fact that they have nearly – I mean, I didn't do the math, but it's like 75, 80% of the team that's playing for the Admirals right now was called up to play for the Preds this season. That is an anomaly.
Now,
that does not happen.
Now, if the Titans had something happen like this – you would be talking about the injuries. You would be talking about the guys coming in, wouldn't you, Junie?
Oh no! This is a question I want to pose, and I would love the feedback of the listeners. Hit up our text line. You can call in on this 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. If your favorite team has a minor league squad, would you watch it? And I preface this because it is no secret on this station, I am a diehard Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And if the Pittsburgh Steelers had a minor league team, I would watch and cover them religiously because that is how in-depth I am about watching and knowing what is going on with my team. I want to know every single aspect. I want to watch every single press conference. I want to know who's coming up next. And it is really glorifying to see a southern town like this one, and hockey is more of a Northeast Canadian sport. And it's the norm that the South doesn't care about hockey. And the fact that we have a fan base here in town that is so into watching the farm team and watching the prospects and getting really into the games because of how many players have played for the Preds and are now down there helping the Admirals push for the AHL championship, I think it's awesome to see how this city has grown and how it's just absolutely put its arms and adopted the sport of hockey in a town that no one 25-plus years ago would have ever thought would be a hockey town.
No, absolutely. And there are a lot of fans, too, that would love a Carl Taylor as a head coach because that's exactly what I've been hearing on any platform that there are Predator fans. So, at the end of the day, everybody's got good press going on, and I think the Admirals are poised for a good little run. They're playing in Game 5 on Sunday. We've already mentioned it. Oscar Bock scored last night to force a Game 5, just wrote about it, but it's the 15th time that the Admirals have gone to a double overtime. It was their, I believe, fifth longest game in franchise history last night. That's what Aaron Sims, who, by the way, go give him a follow, Aaron Admirals on Twitter.
He did a great job of updating. Yeah. He was like, at this moment in time, this is the seventh longest Admiral game.
Yeah.
At this moment in time, it is the sixth longest. Like, the guy knows his stuff. Like,
yes.
He was on top of it. And he, like, you had mentioned it to me, and I had not taken the time to actually listen to the radio broadcast. I at times have watched the stream when I'm with you watching the game. But
sure.
He is really good at that. So
yeah, he's good.
A couple texts I want to get into, though. Easton says, the Eagles have a minor league team in Georgia that a ton of folks watch. So that's a good one. That's a good one from Easton. The Milwaukee Admirals and with all the talent that they do have right now, and I just think with the amount of prospects that are going to be contributing to the Preds, it is kind of important to see if they win or lose because you want a collective group of winners. And I also look at it from this standpoint. You know, who's going to be the Tommy Novak? You know, like who's going to be the guy that comes out of nowhere and then gets called up, gets his opportunity, and just absolutely seizes it and becomes one of the young guys that fans are starting to look forward to. You can get that by watching
now,
the Milwaukee Admirals.
I think the closest thing to it, Junie, is probably Evangelista, the way that he's been playing.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I mean, I know that he played 24 games with the Preds. Now, had he not, now the original plan was for him to only play in one game with the Predators and then go back. But also, too, I think the other part that brings merit to this entire thing is Barry Trotz. And the reason that I bring Barry up is because if he did not come up through his own time of playing in the minors and being a scout and a coach and then getting his NHL gig and then end up being one of the best coaches in NHL history, look, he cares about this process. He wants to overcook guys in the minors, like he has said, and he also wants to value that partnership. They just extended their partnership, too. That was well worth noting. And David Poile is just as much important because he kept that partnership going. And hardly, you don't see, like, the Sounds have changed affiliation so many times.
Mm-hmm.
The Predators have had one minor league affiliate. They have had one building. They have one road to get to Nashville. And Barry is proving to us time and time again since he's popped up in, you know, February, why it's important to have a good minor league system.
It is very important when it comes to the minor league and watching the development of young prospects coming up to the majors. And like I said, just seeing that grow in the city of Nashville has been really good. But something else that's been really important that has been coming up and has been breaking news here recently has been the update of the head coaching position with John Hines. It seems as longer and longer as this thing plays out, it seems the Predators are going to move on. But is that the right decision? We will discuss that next. You are listening to Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
Barry Trotz with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Barry, you talked about, you know, the status of John Hines at the end of the season press conference, and now he's under contract, but some evaluation still needs to take place. Where are you at in terms of the evaluation of John Hines, and is there any news on what his status looks like for next year?
No, I exactly what I said at the press conference. I'm going to evaluate. I think John did a terrific job, as I said when I came on. We sort of moved four players at the trade deadline. He lost eight players to injury, and he continued to, you know, forge on with the group. And what I like about what John did is he just coached the group that he had, and I know John and his staff are good coaches. I sat in their meetings. I listened to them. I understand what they're doing. So with John, I just said, you know, from my perspective, everybody is going to be evaluated. And also, I'm going to evaluate other organizations, too. So if I can improve in any aspect of our organization, be it coaching or development, I'm going to try to do that. But I can tell you the staff is a really good staff. They know what they're doing, and I have a lot of trust in them.
That was Barry Trotz with Robbie and Rexrod a few weeks ago, saying that the evaluation process of head coach John Hines is still going on. And I posed a question before we went into break, Nick, was should his job still be evaluated, and should they move on from John Hines at this point in the offseason? And I discussed this with Michelle last week, and I just question why so late. You know, the Preds didn't make the playoffs. Certain teams that got knocked out in the first round made their coaching decision immediately. And I feel like if you're going to move on from John Hines at this stage in the offseason, you're already two or three steps behind other teams that are going in on the coaching search. And I also think it is immoral for you to try and talk to coaching prospects and basically dangle that carrot in front of your current coach's head. And then if the coaching prospect that you want winds up going somewhere else, that you end up sticking with the guy that you have.
So to a sense, I do agree with they've taken a little too long to make the decision. Where I differ in a way is the way that they want to go about the coaching staff. And I'm really under the impression that, and I love that everyone has enthusiasm for Carl Taylor to be the next head coach. We just got done talking about the Admirals and the magnitude that that has on the Predators' future. I don't think he's going to be the head coach. I think if he does have any sort of promotion, you would see it be as an assistant to the Predators. So depending on who is the next head coach, I could see Carl coming up. I could also see you have Rollo down in Milwaukee. You've got Scott Ford down there too. Those are two very capable coaches of supporting Carl Taylor wherever else he goes, if he does become the head coach. But I'm saying Carl would be an assistant before getting his shot, more than likely. Now, we're not inside Barry's head. Barry's not joining us anytime soon. What he said, that's the closest thing to an update that we have. And, you know, Spencer Carberry was the name that has been thrown out there a lot, Junie. But
and he's from the Toronto Maple Leafs,
he's
right?
The assistant. And just yesterday, the Maple Leafs don't have a GM. They don't have a special advisor to the GM, Jason Spezza, who was a storied veteran, one of the best forwards in Ottawa Senators history, becomes an assistant to Kyle Dubas, and he left yesterday. And that tells me there's going to be significant change in Toronto, not just with the front office, but with the players this offseason too. And Carberry's part of it. Carberry has had three different interviews in the NHL. So as I'm pulling it up, I'll tell you some about Carberry. So Carberry was the assistant head coach in Hershey when Barry Trotz was the head coach of the Capitals. So they had a relationship. They were guys that probably stayed in touch because they had guys coming up and down and what have you.
Of course.
So the fact that he knows him that way, it's going to bring some merit to that conversation of, hey, Barry's going to go get his guy. I think that makes perfect sense. The only problem is he has had a couple of different interviews.
I know one of them was with the Rangers.
Yes, he has been with the Rangers. He's talked to Anaheim, and he's also talked to the Capitals. That was perfect because I just pulled up where he had been. The Rangers had to ask for permission before. So strange little situation for Carberry. Now, if the Predators were going to do that, and people were reacting to what Elliot Friedman had to say in that little update, because he joined our show on Thursday, and he said, you know, I would expect it to happen soon, which stirred up the whole fan base for the most part, because word's going to spread with that. So, and he doesn't want to come on here and break news or anything. He doesn't want to stir a fire or anything like that. So if it's not Carberry, then who is it going to be? That's a great question. There's Jeff Halpern. He's a former coach, used to play for the Washington Capitals. He's a popular name that might go back to Washington. Now, the other candidates, you've got Gerard Gallant, who just got fired from the Rangers. Now, if the Preds somehow got him, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
I think he's a proven coach. The Rangers had a huge mistake letting him go. He's had a lot of success, especially with the Golden Knights when they started that franchise. So I'd like to know what's going to happen with him. The Preds are not going to do this. I would really think they're not going to do this. But Joel Quenneville is reportedly going to be meeting with Gary Bettman at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs to perhaps be let back into the NHL for a coaching job.
So I want to ask you this, Nick. For this team, the way it's constructed right now, in the middle of a rebuild, with the assets and the cap space that it has, a new GM.
Okay.
If they were to make a coaching change, would you rather go with a coach that has head coaching experience or one of these younger coaches like you've been discussing that are waiting for their opportunity but have a lot of promise under them?
See, I'd like to know, and this is what's so hard because Barry's new. If I knew who he had as a short list of who he was going to talk to, I would maybe say a new coach. I would rather it be someone experienced until I know what the short list is. But that's just me personally. I would rather have a Gallant type come in here and help turn this team around, because I don't think they're going to be anywhere near like the Blackhawks are rebuilding or anything like that. They're definitely not. They need to move off of some players, but they're not that far gone.
Yeah, no, this I feel like this could be a quick rebuild with the cap space they have, with the draft capital. I feel like they're going to do a combination of, you know, drafting a few players that they're going to put, you know, into the farm system that are going to be good for this team. And also because, you know, they've been talking about this draft this year. That is one of the better and more deep drafts. So the Preds, with the amount of draft picks that they have, I feel like have an opportunity to really go and find a good prospect. And also in the meantime, use some of that extra draft capital, because you have 13 picks, to maybe trade and package that up with a veteran and ship them off and try to go get a marquee player that can improve this roster now. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of flexibility that's going on with this. But my question is still posed. It's just why this is taking so long. And in all reality, do you think they move on? What is more likely? Them staying with John Hines, maybe making a move in the season if things, you know, start off rough? Or do you think that they actually might go ahead and let him go and get a new coach this offseason?
I would love to give you a definitive answer. If I did, I would say no. But I would also, I feel like I have to say this. I feel like Teron saying this, like I have to say this. If Barry does not do his due process like Carthon has done, you know, talking about how he's been very diligent, then if the Preds are not diligent and Barry's not diligent and they don't have their guy, you need to expect that John will be here this year, probably for the full season, because he has 1 year left on his deal. That's exactly what Barry said, and Barry is playing chess right now. He's doing exactly what he needs to do, and as we know, he's long-winded, and he's going to talk his way around anything when he's asked about it.
No, absolutely. I completely agree with that. If you're asking me, I say John Hines is the coach to start the season, but you know, similar to how they started off rough and really got behind in the standings, I think if that happens again with how the season ended last year with the young guys, you get those young players in and you get your veterans back and you're healthy with goaltending that UC Soros is going to provide you, I don't see why they wouldn't make a move before the new year. So, you know, that's still going to be up in the air. Hopefully we get a decision and an announcement about that here soon. But transitioning here, I have talked to somebody that is close to Treylon Burks.
The T.
And I have been down on Treylon Burks. I have not thought that he is going to turn into a very elite receiver. But when talking to this individual, it has slightly changed my mind. We will get into that next. You are listening to Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.